Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is, well, pretty laser-focused. We're taking the really technical standards for preparing client loan applications, specifically from the competency standard FNSFMB 411, and we're going to turn them into, you know, usable strategic knowledge for you. Think of it as a shortcut, a way to understand what that elite-level practice really looks like in finance and mortgage broking. We're zeroing in on analytical rigor, efficiency, and maybe most importantly, ethics.
And that ethical piece, it isn't just a suggestion. It's actually a legal requirement that frames this entire process. Before we even talk about, you know, paperwork, we have to establish these two crucial pillars the sources always highlight: responsible lending and the best interest duty. And these are not just catchphrases.
Right.
Responsible lending. That means making sure the client can actually afford the loan without substantial hardship. You're checking their income, expenses, their real capacity. But the best interest duty, that's more proactive. It means you have to put the client's interest first, genuinely first. So the advice has to leave them in a better position.
That's such a great way to frame it.
Yeah.
It immediately makes it about fiduciary responsibility, not just filling out forms.
Exactly. Every single step we're about to discuss is really an exercise in proving you've met those two standards.
Okay, so let's unpack this. We'll follow the professional steps, starting right where it all begins, the client intake. So the first step is compiling that foundation. And it's strategic, you said, not just administrative.
Yeah, that's it.
It kicks off with identifying the client's real goals and objectives. Why are they even here? What do they want? And right at that same moment, you have to lock down the client confidentiality requirements.
It's the handshake, the foundational handshake of trust.
And if you mess that up?
The whole application is built on shaky ground. So once that ethical boundary is set, you pivot to the data hunt. You have to get the client's detailed financial and personal information.
And I imagine that's more than just what they bring you in a folder.
Oh, way more. That's the difference between an amateur and a pro. You don't just collect what they hand you. A professional uses that initial data to proactively identify all the supporting information you need.
To meet all the regulations.
To meet the codes of practice, legislation, all of it. It's like a gap analysis. You're finding what's missing to build a perfectly compliant file, not just a, you know, a full file.
Okay, but what about the client in all this? I mean, handing over personal balance sheets, pay stubs, that can be pretty nerve-wracking.
It absolutely can be. And that's why the communication step is so vital. And honestly, it's often overlooked by rookies. You must advise the client on the whole loan preparation and presentation process.
You mean walk them through it?
Step by step. You have to tell them, here's what we're collecting, here's why we need it, and here's exactly how long this is going to take.
That transparency is huge. It must manage their anxiety, set expectations.
Immediately. It turns what feels like a black box into a clear roadmap. They get it. And they know they need to provide things accurately and quickly because they understand the timeline.
So that phase then wraps up with the actual admin, the signatures and documents.
Exactly. You gather the final required docs, get the signatures, and the paperwork is officially underway.
Okay. That transitions us really smoothly into the second major element then, analytical preparation. So we're moving from just gathering stuff to what? Quality checking.
Quality checking and strategic decision making. This is where the rubber meets the road on accuracy. The main task is to confirm the loan requirements and then just rigorously check all the supporting documents for accuracy and readability.
And we're not just talking about spell checking, are we?
No, we mean things like reconciling bank statements against what they've declared as income, making sure the numbers actually line up.
Can you give us a quick example?
Yeah.
Because accuracy and readability still sounds a bit technical.
Sure. A common one is a self-employed client. They might give you a profit and loss statement, right? But the application needs tax returns, and those might show very different figures after deductions. The professional has to reconcile those differences, understand the specific lender's guidelines on income for that scenario, and then present it all clearly. If the lender has to hunt for the key figures, the application just gets kicked back.
Cool. Here's where it gets really interesting for me. Because we're moving past the math and into what sounds like true client advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
The standards bring up this key difference between, what is it? Capable borrowing, comfortable borrowing, and required borrowing.
This is probably the single most important strategic distinction for anyone learning this skill. It's how the best interest duty becomes a real concrete thing.
So break it down for us.
Let's use a scenario. Capable borrowing. That's the absolute maximum the bank's algorithm says a client can handle. Based on strict metrics, you know, debt to income, liabilities, it's the ceiling.
The theoretical limit. You could get that much.
Right. Then there's required borrowing. That's simple. It's the amount they need for their goal, say $500,000 for a specific house. But the ethical sweet spot, the one required under the best interest treaty, is comfortable borrowing. This amount factors in real life.
Real life.
Yeah. Potential interest rate rises, maybe they want to have kids, job insecurity, or even just wanting to take a vacation once a year. It's the amount that lets the client sleep at night because there's a financial buffer.
So you might actually advise them to take less than the bank is offering.
A great professional often will. They'll say, look, you're capable of borrowing $700,000, but based on your goals for security, $600,000 is where we'll be comfortable and, frankly, financially safe.
That's a huge distinction. The broker is acting as a buffer between the bank's capacity model and the client's actual life.
Precisely. And that analysis informs the final steps of this phase. Reviewing the finished docs, confirming everything with the client one last time.
So they really understand what you're signing up for.
Exactly. Based on those comfortable metrics.
Yeah.
And then completing the document execution according to procedure.
So with the analysis done and the signatures on the page, we're moving to element three.
Mm.
Presenting it all for assessment and, well, managing what comes next.
Right.
The submission process itself, again, highly regulated. You submit the clean compiled documents to the lender or the approving officer, and you have to strictly, and I mean strictly, stick to those client confidentiality requirements.
Any breach there, given an accidental one, can have really severe professional consequences. But once it's submitted, your job is far from over. You have to actively manage that assessment phase.
So you're following up.
Constantly. If the lender asks for more info, and they almost always do, maybe a clarification on an expense or an updated statement, you have to get it promptly to keep the momentum going. You're the quarterback, really, in contact with both sides.
And then the decision comes back. What happens then?
You immediately get the decision and you have to notify the client. It's either an offer or a non-offer of a loan, and you follow strict company policies on how you do that.
A rejection. That's got to be a tough conversation.
It is. But this is where professionalism really stands out. If it's a non-offer, you can't just disappear. You still have to provide the required information to the client. You have to explain why it was rejected.
So you walk them through the lender's reasoning.
Yes. And you suggest viable next steps, alternative strategies. It really emphasizes that ongoing advisory role. Your commitment to their best interest doesn't stop just because one application failed.
So you'd advise them on how to proceed, even if that means going to a different lender or maybe telling them to wait 6 months and fix something?
Exactly that. The duty requires you to keep adhering to all the codes of practice and specifically advising the client on how to move forward after any lender decision. You manage the whole spectrum of outcomes.
Okay, we've mapped the process steps really thoroughly, which is fantastic. But to be truly proficient, you need more than just a checklist. You need deep, adaptable knowledge. So let's shift focus to the scope of knowledge and technical performance required here.
This is where the standards really demand versatility. The performance expectation is rigorous because it forces you to be adaptable. A candidate has to prepare at least 3 different loan applications, and each one with a fundamentally different credit scenario.
That's fascinating. What kind of different scenarios? We're not just talking about different types of houses, are we?
Oh, no, not at all. We're talking different borrower profiles. So maybe one is a standard PAYG employee, clean financials, easy. The second might be a complex self-employed client with multiple business entities that requires deep cash flow analysis.
And the third?
The third might be a client with a history of credit issues, someone who needs a very specific product and a lot of justification to get them approved. You have to prove you can navigate 3 separate sets of problems.
That variety proves the competency is analytical then, not just procedural. So what specific knowledge lets you do that?
Well, the required knowledge areas are really broad. They link to the entire financial ecosystem. For example, loan management often means you have to instruct valuers to assess the value of a property or other types of security. You need to know why the valuer is needed and what they do.
You have to understand the whole end-to-end process.
The whole thing. Including all the stages and features of the loan settlement processes, you can't advise a client if you don't know the full journey from the application all the way to money in their hand.
And you mentioned complex self-employment for one of those scenarios. That sounds like it requires some pretty sophisticated financial interpretation.
Absolutely. A huge part of the technical skill is knowing the methods to analyze business and financial data. And that's more than just looking at a payslip. It means understanding EBITDA, cash flow projections, depreciation, and how different lenders interpret those figures. You're translating raw data into a compelling compliance story.
And then, of course, you need the core loan knowledge, the term interest rate and amount, and how to structure those for that comfortable borrowing scenario we talked about.
Exactly. And all that intense technical knowledge. It has to be conveyed flawlessly. The performance evidence really emphasizes communication. You have to communicate efficiently and effectively with clients, lenders, and other required parties.
The best analysis is useless if you can't explain it properly.
Precisely. If it's delivered poorly or it's confusing, it's worthless.
This has been a true deep dive. I think the key takeaway for you, the listener, is clear. Professional loan preparation is this precise intersection of administrative detail, tough regulatory compliance, that's the responsible lending part, and active client advocacy, the best interest duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a career built on trust and detail.
And I think the ultimate complexity of the job is that ethical tightrope walk. You have to make sure every single box is ticked for the lender. But at the same time, you're meticulously guiding your client toward comfortable borrowing, which often means deliberately steering them away from their maximum capable borrowing.
That restraint is the definition of high standards.
It really is.
So as you move forward with this, let's leave you with one final provocative thought. It builds on that need for adaptability across those three different credit scenarios. We know a professional has to understand the different types of security that may be required by lenders. So beyond the standard house you're buying, what surprising, unusual, or complex types of security things like specialized machinery or intellectual property or complex trusts might be required in those high-level varied scenarios? And how would that complexity drastically alter the structure and the success of the entire application? Something to mull over as you continue your learning journey.